proceed on with chapter 14 from verse number 7 onwards. This chapter deals with the division of the three gunas, sattvic, rajasic and tamasic. And why is it so important for us to have a knowledge of the three gunas? Because Krishna explained in this chapter from verse number 4 that all the creation has come from Prakriti. Everything in creation, meaning including our physical body, our mind, our intellect, everything in creation has been created from the five elements: ether, air, fire, water, earth. That is Prakriti. And what is contained inside this Prakriti are the three gunas that he told in verse number 5. That the three gunas are born out of Prakriti. Therefore, the three gunas, sattvic, rajasic and tamas, are in Prakriti. Meaning what? Meaning the composition or the physical appearance of our body depends on the mixture of the three gunas. Our mind, our thoughts, our desires, our aspirations depend also on the mixture of the three gunas. The type of intellect we have also depends on the mixture of the three gunas. Why? Because body, mind and intellect is also what? Prakriti, so it's matter. So it is subject to modification due to the three gunas. And since the three gunas modify our thoughts, our desires, our knowledge, therefore, in short, what it means is that our entire personality is governed by the three gunas. What type of character you are, how you speak, how you think, the type of company you mix with, the type of books you read, the type of places you go to, all this is determined by the three gunas. So that's why it's very important. If we have a goal in life, what should we do? If I have spirituality as the goal in life, what should I do? I should enhance my sattvic gunas. I should work on my increasing my sattvic gunas and reducing the rajasic gunas and somehow reducing the tamasic gunas. That means I must ensure that sattvic gunas must predominate my rajasic and tamasic gunas. Then they will take me in the direction I want. If I want to achieve more materialistic goals, more worldly desires, then I just have to make sure my rajasic gunas are increasing. And how do I do that? Although we are born with the three gunas, they are already dictating our personality now, but because of our free will, we can change the composition of our gunas. So through the sadhana of karma yoga, upasana yoga, jnana yoga, I can change by my actions the mixture of the three gunas. And then the three gunas, when sattva is predominant in me, I don't have to put much effort. By my own nature, I'm driven towards spiritual activities. So that's why it's very important for us to understand how each guna affects us. And Krishna wants to explain about the three gunas by giving us, by breaking it down into five topics. What was the first topic? Lakshanam. Meaning what? The nature. What is definition of sattvic? What is rajasic? What is tamasic? Second is bandhanam. How each guna also binds us. Because another name for guna is rope. So it binds the soul to the body. Even sattvic guna also is a bandhanam. And the third topic was lingam, meaning because the gunas are in us, we must know how they manifest in us. What is the type of character a sattvic guna has? What is the type of character the rajasic guna person has? So he will indicate to us lingam, meaning what we call manifestations or signs in a person, for us to know which guna is dominant in us. The fourth topic is gati, which means gati is while direction of travel at the after the time of death. If sattvic guna is predominant, where we go? And if the other two gunas are prominent, where do we go? And finally is phalam, while living, what is the what we call the result or the fruit of each guna. Okay, so when we came to verse number 6, we covered sattvic gunas in two topics. One was what was that? The characteristics of the guna, right? Which is what is that word again? Lakshanam, sorry, yeah. Lakshanam of the sattvic guna, the characteristic of the sattvic guna, and what was the bandhanam. So now we will carry on with verse number 7, where Krishna wants to explain what is the lakshanam and bandhanam of rajasic gunas. So when it comes to rajasic gunas, Krishna says viddhi. Viddhi, that means know. May you know, may you be aware that what is the nature of rajasic gunas, how it is affecting us. What is the lakshanam? It is rajo ragatmakam. So raga, the nature of rajo, rajas guna, is predominantly raga. Raga, you can understand, it is raga dvesha. So raga means what? Attachment or likes. And here, of course, it has been translated as passion. Our passion which leads to attachment. Maka means of the very nature. So Rajoguna, when it is there in us, its nature is to increase our level of attachment, our level of of passion. So Rajasic Guna, because of this attachment and passion, automatically it leads a person to what? More vibrant activity. So Rajas leads us to do a lot of actions. And is actions good or bad? Are actions good or bad? It depends, right? So what is the positive aspect of Rajas? It leads to dynamic action. It leads to a dynamic mind, always thinking and planning. That is the positive aspect of Rajas. But what is the downside of Rajas is that it makes the mind highly restless, very agitating. So if we compare sattva, rajas and tamas, sattvic person, is he productive? Is the mind restless? No. Rajasic person, is he productive?
Yes.
Is the mind peaceful?
No.
Tamasic person, is he productive?
No.
Is the mind at peace?
Yes.
Ignorance is bliss. So it is at peace. The tamasic mind is at peace. I don't want to know anything. I don't care about anything. Leave me alone. I want to... Dullness. I want to eat and sleep. So it is at bliss. But it is not productive. So we compare sattva, rajas, tamas. Productivity in sattvas, peace of mind. Rajas, productivity, no peace of mind. Tamas, no productivity, but peace of mind. So the rajasic mind is very highly restless. It has no peace. And a rajasic mind cannot sit quietly. So never ever prescribe meditation for rajasic mind. Very allergic to meditation, right? And a sattvic guna mind will predominantly use which part of the body? Mind, samo? A sattvic person will use his... Okay, in order to use the mind in intellect, what other equipment does he need? He needs the five senses. He needs the eyes, the ears, to hear, to listen to knowledge, to intake knowledge. So in a sattvic person, the jnana indriyas are very active, constantly searching for knowledge. In a rajasic person, what is the most active part of the body? The karma indriyas, the hands, the feet, the vocal cords are constantly working. So in a rajasic person, the karma indriyas are very, very productive. So what else is the qualities of a rajasic person? Here Krishna uses one more word here. In the second line you see the word Trishna. Trishna means thirst, hankering, continuous wanting something, always continuously. And thus this hankering, this Trishna, is Sangas Mudbhavam. Sangas Mudbhavam means it is born, the rajasic mind, the hankering is born out of what? Out of attachment. Due to the very attachment we have for things, out of that is born a hankering. See, in chapter 2, Krishna said, how does our desire spring up? How does our desire spring up? Because we are always thinking of something. A mind that is always thinking of something. I want this, I want that, I must have this, I must have that. So desire does not happen if we don't let the mind run in that direction. The more and more we let the mind run in that direction, the offshoot of that is the desire for that object or that person springs up. And then if we don't control that desire, then what happens? What happens then? Once desire overpowers, it pushes you to action. So first comes attachment for the object, from which comes desire, and the desire, when it goes out of control, pushes us into action. And then if the action is successful, what happens? No, you get happy, right? But it leads to more desires. And more desires lead to what? Greed. When desires get out of control, it becomes greed. Greed is nothing but desires out of control. So one side of desires being satisfied is it leads to greed. If desires are not satisfied, it leads to anger, disappointment, agitation, etc., etc. So whichever way we look at it, a rajasic mind is constantly thirsting and hankering. So it continuously pushes a person into action. So what is the definition between a poor man and a rich man? What is the definition between a poor man and a rich man? Not necessarily having money because it makes you rich. What is the definition between a poor man and a rich man? Huh? No, I'm talking about material wealth. And a poor man has no money, no property?
Rich man has no desire.
Rich man has no desire. Rich man has no desire. The definition of a rich man is one whose income exceeds desires. Isn't it? A rich man is one whose income exceeds desires. Even a poor man can be a rich man. Why? As long as my desires, my income, my desires don't exceed my income, I'm always rich. So who is a poor man? Whose desires exceed income. No matter how rich I am, as long as my desires keep on generating faster than my income, I'm also a poor man. No matter how much money I have. Right? Right. So this is the nature of a rajasic person, because it continuously drives, his desires drive him into action. Ultimately, it will lead to a lot of disappointments. It will lead to a lot of problems. Right? So therefore, that is the lakshanam of a rajasic guna mind, thirst. Sattvic guna mind has also got thirst for what? For knowledge. Rajasic guna mind has got thirst for many, many things, for desires, to satisfy many desires. That is the basic nature of the rajasic mind. Now, bandhanam. Now, in this very verse, Krishna speaks about bandhanam, the bondage. So he says, tan nibhat nanti. Tan means these rajasic gunas. Nibhat nati means binds the individual. How? Now, by karma sangena. By attaching a person to continuous activities upon activities. Because of the attachment leading to desires, the desires keeps on constantly pushing a person into endless activities. And what is the problem of a mind, and who is the one who is pushed into activity? Here it is identified as Dehinam. Dehinam in short is the jiva, the bound jiva, who is bound by the three gunas, is forced to act. Forced to act, push this body, this mind into continuous action. And what is the problem with a mind that keeps on desiring more and more and more? The scriptures say there will come a time when your desires multiply so fast that physically you are unable to keep up with them. Right? Your desires are tremendously multiplying. The mind has got the capacity to multiply desires at a tremendous rate. But physically your body cannot satisfy so many desires. So what happens? Then comes frustration, agitation, anger, disappointment, etc. So that's why it is important for us, not to say don't have desires, but first of all, what should we do? Have clean desires. We can have desires, but we should try to cultivate more clean desires rather than what we call rajasic or passionate or selfish desires. So this is the nature of a rajasic mind. It binds a person through continuous, repeated action. And what type of action? Mainly selfish action. Everything I do is for myself. Verse number 8, now we talk about, Krishna talks about tamasik guna lakshanam and tamasik guna bandhanam. So first of all he says, what is the nature of a tamasik guna mind? He uses the word mohanam. You can see in the second line the word mohanam. Now what is mohanam? Basically, translated loosely, moha means delusion. So what is the delusion here in a tamasic person? It keeps the person in a state of confusion and indecisiveness. So there are, for a tamasic person, there are no priorities in life. There are no goals in life. He's not clear about what he wants to do in life. Always the mind is in the state of conflict. Shall I go here? Shall I do this? Shall I, whatever decision he makes, there's always continuous conflicts in the mind. And the greatest, one of the most prominent qualities of a tamasic person is procrastination. Since I cannot make a decision, what should I do? Postpone it. Because I cannot decide, postpone it. I'll think about it tomorrow. Tomorrow comes, I still cannot decide, postpone it. So procrastination. You know, so what? Why worry? Why bother? Procrastination. And some people, unfortunately, their state of confusion is so strong, you try to reason with them, what happens? To a tamasic person, you try to reason with him, you try to show him the right way, try to help him make decision, what happens? He may end up confusing you also. Right or not? So what can you do for a tamasic person? Three things. Three things you can do. Pray. That's all you can do for that person. Because the more you advise him, the more he will get confused, or more he will end up confusing him. So you have to pray and hope that some point in his life, some sattvic guna will, what we call, manifest and at least help him to start changing his or her life. So, sarva dehinam. Now he makes a very important point that all of us, we must not think that only that person, because tamasic deluded, we also have tamasic gunas in us. And we have to be very mindful, very careful. That's why Krishna says, mohanam sarva dehinam. All of us can fall under this state of delusion, under this state of confusion, under this state of procrastination. It is one of the symbols or signs of tamasic guna. So we must be very careful. If there is a tendency in us to keep on procrastinating and being always confused how to make decisions, that means these tamasic gunas are getting stronger and stronger in us. And what is the other nature of tamasic gunas? We go back to the first line, ajnanam. Ajnanam, that is ignorance. And the tamasic guna mind has no interest in learning. It doesn't want to know anything. So continuously is in a state of ignorance, in a state of doubt. And when you don't learn anything, you're also always doubting. You do not know how to make decisions. So a tamasic guna mind, therefore, when it predominates a rajasic guna mind, also it is not interested in taking up any activity also. Right? Thus the mind who is predominant in tamoguna is kept in a perpetual state of darkness. And there Krishna says, Tan Nibat Nati Bharata. Arjuna, Bharata is another name for Arjuna. That is how Tan means the tamasic gunas bind, Nibat Nati. They bind you through a state of ignorance and through a state of mohanam, indecisiveness and confusion. Now, this word, therefore Krishna says, he's given us the what we call the characteristics, lakshanam and nibandhanam of sattvic, rajasic and tamasic guna. Now if you notice in the Sanskrit words, verse 6, for bondage, what did Krishna use the word for bondage in verse number 6? Badanati, which is, it binds. Look at verse 7, what did he use for bondage? Line 3. No, nibadnati. You see, he added an extra, what we call, a prefix, nibadnati. In verse number 8, again, if you look at the last line, it is nibadnati. So, what is the difference? Badnati and nibadnati. Both have been translated as bound, but there is a prefix attached for tamasic and rajasic. So, when he adds a prefix, it means to be beware. That's why he uses the word viddhi in verse number 7, he used the word viddhi. Viddhi means may you know. Verse number 8, may you know also, may you be aware that rajasic and tamasic gunas, not only do they bind, but nibadnati means they bind very, very strongly. The binding, the glue of rajas and tamas is more stronger than their sattvic gunas. That means what? What does it mean? A lot of effort is required. If you want to break out of tamas, it's very, very difficult. A lot of effort required. You want to break out of rajas, it is also very, very difficult. Whereas sattvic bond is very, very light. It is easy to break out. So that's why you remember in chapter 3, Krishna gave us three types of desires. Sattvic desire, rajasic desire, tamasic desire. How did he describe sattvic desire? He used metaphor to describe sattvic desire in chapter 3. He said like smoke covers the fire. Your fire is your power of thinking. And smoke covers a fire means sattvic desire. It means in order for our capacity to think, we just have to move the smoke away. Smoke is the desire. It binds our capacity to rationalize. So sattvic desires are also a type of desire, but they are not strong desires. Meaning, just like smoke covers a fire, when a little bit wind blows, the smoke goes away, you can see the fire. So that means our power of rational, of thinking, of making decisions, is not so strong when it is controlled by sattvic gunas or sattvic desires. Rajasic gunas, he described how like dust covers a mirror. Meaning, when there is dust on the mirror, you have to put in a lot of effort to wipe away the dust, to use soap, to use water. And tamasic gunas, he described by using the metaphor like a womb covers the embryo. Meaning those are the very, what we call, very basic, base desires, desires of the flesh, very strong desires. The embryo needs a time period to break out of the womb. He cannot just simply come out of the womb. So these tamasic gunas, when they bind us, it's very, very difficult for us to come out. We need a lot of help. We need a lot of assistance. We need a lot of our good past karmas also to help us also. Otherwise, we are continuously stuck in this state of ignorance and of moha delusion. So that's why he changes the word nibadnati, strongly bind us, tamasic and rajasic guna. Yes, of course. The actions in the previous births have led to the present situation where we have predominant rajasic or tamasic guna. And therefore we must use our free will to break out of it. To go from tamas to rajas, rajas to sattva, and finally transcend sattva also. Okay? So how do these rajasic gunas, they bind? Sorry? You said something?
No, I was thinking very difficult situation because of our previous karma,
right.
It got tamas, predominantly tamas.
Right.
And now, to break out of it, require lots and lots of it.
And not your effort, you probably need somebody else to help you out, right? So also, it's a tough, it's not easy, yes. Now, the only thing you can hope for is that in the past you have done some good deeds, that some karma will fructify in this life and help you to. So we have seen people who have gone right down, what we call very evil people, have changed their lives also. Something has come into their lives, they meet the right guru or the right saint or the right person, and from that they have changed their lives also. Right? So some past guna also, some past karma also has got to fructify. So you must have done at least something good in past life. Hopefully somewhere it will fructify. Right? And how does it bind? He says, tan nibadnati, it binds to pramada. Now, because a tamasic person does not want to acquire knowledge, whatever work he does either hurriedly, he wants to finish the work and go and sleep for it. So either he will rush through the work and do it hurriedly, and even if he makes mistakes, he doesn't want to learn how to improve. So what will be the quality of his work? It is pramada. Pramada means makes many, many mistakes in every action. A lot of carelessness in every action. Action upon action, keep on making the same mistakes over and over again. So that is the very nature of a tamasic guna person. It makes a person pramada, callous. And what else? Alasya. That's all in the third line. Pramada, alasya, nidra. There are three qualities there. Pramada is continuously committing more and more callousness. Alasya is laziness. Person finds all ways to escape duties and responsibilities. So that is alasya, procrastination. That is a big sign of tamasic guna. And nidra, you can understand, is sleep. It causes the person to want to sleep. But sleep is important, right? All of us have to sleep, to rest and recuperate. So sleeping is not a problem. What is a problem? Continuing to sleep, excessive sleeping, that is the problem, right? So that is the nature of a tamasic person also. Predominance, it binds a person, and therefore the person does not achieve anything in life, either material success or spiritual success. Such a person does not even question what is the purpose of human life. So what does he do? Eat, sleep, drink, doesn't work, procreates, and finally, what we call, he dies. Where do you think will be his next birth? Definitely is not going to be Manusha Janma. So, Manusha, huh? What? So, not definitely such a person is not going to come back. That's why, again, if you see, why it's so important for us to understand the purpose of human birth and don't waste this human birth. It is our last chance to rise spiritually. But if we give in to rajas and tamas, we are going to go downwards also. So now in the past 3 verses, 6, 7 and 8, he has covered 2 topics, lakshanam and bandhanam of the 3 gunas. Now in this verse number 9, he is basically summarizing what he has covered in these 3 verses. Right? And each guna, we need to understand, it creates a bondage in the sense that you need a particular type of setup A sattvic person has got certain preferences. A rajasic person will have his own preferences. A tamasic person will have his own preferences. Due to the dominance of each guna, each of us get attached to a particular type of setup. Now, for a sattvic person, what happens here? Krishna says, sattvam sukhe sanjayati. Sanjayati means attach. A sattvic mind gets attached to what? Sukha, meaning happiness. So what do we mean by that? A sattvic mind becomes addicted to, he or she always wants sukha, meaning I want a happy atmosphere, I want a serene atmosphere, I want a calm atmosphere. Why? Because why do I want a serene, like you come to this class, what type of atmosphere you want? You don't want a noisy atmosphere, right? You want everybody to be quiet, outside, no distraction. Why? Because you want to focus on the knowledge. So even at home, you are focusing on knowledge, you are trying to read, you are trying to understand. So whatever environment you need, you are addicted to a very serene and calm atmosphere. So a sattvic mind will get very disturbed if there is some noise, there is some disturbance, somebody gets in their way, creates noise. So the problem is the sattvic mind also gets bound, also it also gets attached to a calm atmosphere. Now, it is not wrong to want a calm atmosphere. What is the problem? Right, so attachment to a calm atmosphere is bad, but what should we then do? What should we do? We want a calm atmosphere, but what should we do? We have to therefore learn to convert all our attachments into preferences. I prefer a calm atmosphere. Therefore, if I don't get a calm atmosphere, what do? I try to adjust to it. It's okay, I try to adjust to it. But when I'm attached to it, I demand a calm atmosphere, then any little sound of disturbance also will disturb you. Whereas a person who has transcended the three gunas, for him is not affected at all by the calm atmosphere. Even in a noisy atmosphere, his mind also is at peace. So attachment is dangerous. We have to learn how to convert all our attachments into preferences. So attachment, even what we call attachments, have got to be converted to preference. So that's why Krishna says here, sattvam sukhe sanjayati. A sattvic person always wants a calm, peaceful atmosphere. What about rajasic mind? Rajaha karmani. Rajasic mind is always attached to karmani, action upon action. Restless mind. Never satisfied with what he has. Why is a rajasic mind never satisfied with what he has? Why does he have desires? Because we always compare ourselves with others. That's where the dissatisfaction comes out from. If I'm number two, I want to run after number one. When I reach number one, I'm also not happy because number two also is chasing after me, also, right? So always, continuously, I want to be there number one. So that is a problem. It binds you to, you want to hold on to what you have, and you want to chase after what you don't have. Acquisition, preservation, A&P. So that is the nature of a rajasic mind. And for a tamasic mind, jnanam avritya tu tamaha. The tamasic mind is subject or attached to avritya. Avritya means covering. Covering basically means is a tamasic mind suppresses both sattvic, that means no inclination to knowledge. It suppresses rajas, that means no inclination to activity also. So a sattvic mind, a tamasic mind is overpowered by what we call avritya, by covering. It is not at all interested in knowing, in knowledge. It is not at all interested in action also. So it is attached to what he says, pramade sanjayati. Pramade means again carelessness. Basically a tamasic mind is careless mind, confused mind. So such a person will always choose to ignore or avoid or even pass on the duties to another person. And why we should never depend on a tamasic person to do work? Even if he does the work, what happens? You will have to still do more work to correct what that person has done. So try not to give so much of duties to tamasic people. It's better to engage them in something else. So that is the problem. They do the work, they do with callousness, they do with tidapa attitude, and we have to, we meet all these kind of tamasic people when we go out for shopping especially. You go and ask a person, where is this, what is it? Tatao. Simple word, tatao, I don't know. We are working in a shop for 10 years, you also say tatao also. So that is a basic nature of a tamasic person. Now, since the gunas are in all the creation, that's what we have understood. Everything in creation has got the three gunas. Even the wall, has it got the gunas? It has all the three gunas, right? So even the wall also has three gunas. It has tamas, it has rajas, it has sattva. But the thing is, tamas is the predominant guna. 99%, 98% tamas. 1% rajas. If it has too much rajas, what will happen? Wall will move away. So tamas is the predominant. What about animals? Rajasic predominant, right? Very little sattva. So rajasic predominant, backed by tamas, and very little sattva. Plants. What about plants? Plants predominant, tamas also, backed by little rajas and very little sattva also. So everything has got the three gunas, right? And what about humans? There are some with predominant tamasic, predominant rajasic, or predominant sattvic. And this we have to understand. You see, if plants have got predominant tamas and animals have got predominant rajas, means what? Compared to human beings, which can have either of the three dominants, means what does it tell us? Animals and plants have no choice, whereas we have a choice. That's why all of us can have a different predominance of different gunas, whereas animals and plants don't have a choice. So therefore, this is something which is in our hands also to change, right? So now, again we have to understand one more point, I have to repeat that the higher nature, we are what we call a combination of two natures. Prakriti plus Purusha. Where are the gunas? In Prakriti, not in the Purusha. The consciousness is devoid of gunas. That's why it's called Nirguna. It's devoid of gunas. It is the weakness consciousness. Whereas it is matter which has got the three gunas. So what Krishna wants to say here in this verse is that the very nature of a person is determined by the three gunas, and one guna will always rise to suppress the other two gunas. So you can never have three equal gunas. It will always be one guna which dominates and which will affect your likes and dislikes. Okay? So the swabhava or nature of the person is very central to the gunas. Now the Ramayana gives us a very beautiful depiction of this with the three brothers. You know who are the three brothers? So Ravan is predominant what guna? Ravan predominant which guna? Why Rajas? Selfish. Actually Ravan was a very knowledgeable person. But problem with him was what? He was very arrogant, right?
Because of the powers from Shiva, he was very arrogant.
Right.
He's the most powerful person.
Right.
So it's Rajas.
And yet, if you look at Rajas, like Ravan, he had everything in the world.
Yes.
He was the king of Lanka. He had all the money, all the food to eat, beautiful wife, everything he had. One thing he didn't have. Sita. Right or not? What caused his destruction? Huh? No, whatever it is, the desire is what? One thing I don't have. I can have everything, 99%, everything is fine. This one thing he didn't have was what? Sita. That drove him to what? Action. And that action brought about his downfall. That is the Rajasic mind. Can have everything perfect, but one thing is not there, it disturbs his mind. And who is the Sattvic brother? Vibhishan. The only one who was knowledgeable, the only one who advised Ravan, don't go and kidnap Sita. And of course, you can guess who is the Tamasic person. Kumbhakarna. 6 months sleeping, 6 months eating. So, Raman is a very beautiful depiction, his three brothers also, of the three gunas also, in each individual. So, therefore, since one guna rises to surprise the other two gunas, as I said earlier, we have to understand how to manipulate the gunas in order for us to meet our goals in life. So, first of all here, Krishna says, Sattvam Bhavati. In the second line you see, Sattvam Bhavati. Bhavati means Sattvam. When Sattva Guna rises, when it becomes stronger and stronger, due to your own actions, when Sattva becomes stronger and stronger, what happens? It dominates how? Raja, Tama, Cha, Abhibhuya. You see the word in the first line? Raja, Tamas, Cha Abhibhuya. Abhibhuya means it surprises Rajas and Tamas. So if previously you were a selfish person, if you did just a little bit of some selfless activity, you just got engaged in some danam, you do some danam, you do some seva, just a little bit you do. Every little bit you do, every ounce you do, what happens? Rajas gets a bit less. Every more sattva you do, Rajas gets less. Tamas gets less. So it is little by little you are progressing. Every good deed, every good act, you may do 10 bad acts, but every one good act you do suppresses Rajas, suppresses Tamas. That is the nature of how the gunas work in us. So every little action that you do helps to increase the sattva, and when sattva increases, it suppresses both Rajas and Tamas. And what happens when Rajas arises? So he says, Rajas, Sattvam, Tamas, Cha, Iva. He's giving the same example. We have to supply the words Bhavati and Abhibhuya. Although they appear only once, we have to keep on supplying for all the others. So when Rajas arises, what does it do? It suppresses both Sattvam and Tamas. That means the more and more greedy and selfish activities you do, slowly the sattva also gets suppressed and tamas also gets suppressed. So when sattva gets suppressed, a person who is highly active, selfishly active, when sattvas get suppressed, there is no inclination to gain knowledge. And there is what we call no inclination to rest also. So that's why you see what they call this hyperactive people. They don't want to rest. They don't want to depend on anybody. They feel everything is, they can undertake every action. So these are the people highly restless. Workaholics, that is the word we use, right? Workaholics, exactly. These are very Rajasic people. Tamas, Sattvam, Rajas, Tatha. When Tamas arises, it also suppresses Sattva and Rajas. So this is the very nature. By our own actions, we are changing the proposition, the composition of the gunas. So understand that you have that free will, you have that right. And once you start that little by little good activities, slowly over time you find it becomes natural. Now one very simple example, if you are overweight and you go to the doctor and he says you need to go every morning and take a walk. the very first day you have to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, what happens? You set the alarm for 6 o'clock. The alarm rings. Turn off the alarm and you go to sleep. To get out of the first day out of bed and to put on your shoes, your walking gear is very, very difficult. But if you do it consistently for 1 year, what happens? Then you find that automatically 6 o'clock you jump out of bed, right? So what has happened? The sattvic guna has increased, the tamasic guna has slowly and slowly diluted. So we see the practical application in our life, the same thing it is in the spiritual path. Little by little, I come to you, little by little we will put in the effort, slowly you will find that rajasic and the tamasic guna slowly get suppressed. Yes.
Based on our karma, right? So, how do we differentiate between karma and
rebirth?
Why can't we say, it's my karma to sleep?
It's my karma to sleep.
So, when does the rebirth come in?
So, that's why, you see, as a human being, we have to recognize that we have that free will. The problem is, we are not exercising the free will. Like, for example, that example I give you, exercising. How did we get out of bed, push ourselves, despite being lazy for 10 years, we hate exercise.
Yeah, but I can say that it's my karma to be lazy. I can't say that.
Right. Your karma means what? That by your action, your swabhava, your nature is to be lazy. That's correct.
Yes.
But how do you get out of that laziness? You have to put in effort. So yes, you are right. You can say it is my karma, meaning it is my nature, meaning my gunas have caused me to be lazy. Why? Because in the past 10-15 years I was sedentary, right? So it has become my nature. But how do I break out of this?
So I become fabric, that means it's also my nature.
I become?
I get up and I go for my walk. Then I can also say it's my karma.
Correct.
I'm supposed to change after 15 years.
It's supposed to what?
Change after 15 years. 15 years I've been. Say,
right.
Now, I change after 15 years.
Right.
I become sattvic.
Right.
So I say it's my karma. How do I know it's my free will?
Because you put in the free will, you know. How did you change? How did you change? Okay, let's say somebody has been a robber, a thief all his life. Okay? Then he changes, he wants to change to a new leaf of life. How? By putting his own effort. So that is no more karma already. The karma has brought you to this stage. Now if you change away from what you were, that is your free will. Right? That is your free will. Of course, in that effort to make a change, while you're using your free will, your karma also can help. That past some good deeds you did also can help. So what we can say is a combination of both. But if I say, I will wait until my karma changes me. Right? I can also, if I take that attitude, I will wait until my karmas change. Otherwise, I won't get up from bed and go for exercise. Until my karmas make me do it. So that means what? That means I am not exercising my free will. So I have to put that effort first and then allow some karmas to fructify and push me forward. But very important, first I got to make that first step. So we have, that's why I said before also, we must accept both karma and free will. If I just accept karma and negate free will, then I've wasted my very golden opportunity to change. And if I only accept free will and say karma doesn't work, it all depends on me. That means what? Karma will not, is nothing to do in my life. It is only free will. That means what? That is an arrogant attitude. Right? So, what we should do? Accept both karma and free will. You had something else.
Because earlier we were told, we understand that for spirituality, we don't go as asking for it, expectation.
Right.
So, as we progress, we will slowly gain it. But if we are trying to improve our sattvic qualities, then isn't it like sort of also in the hope that, you know, we are getting something in return?
Correct. See, that's why the initial stage, yes, you must have that desire for changing yourself, for going towards the right direction. But up to a point, you will reach where you totally just surrender everything. You don't even ask for moksha also. In the beginning stage, yes, I want to make an effort. I have a goal. this is what I want. I want moksha. I want to be a better spiritual person. But as you rise on the spiritual ladder, you will reach a state whereby you even just surrender everything to God. Like the sages and saints, they never asked for anything. They left everything in the hands of God. When moksha will come, when anything will come in your life, you just surrender it to God. That's why we go back again to chapter 2, verse 47. Karman eva adhikaraste. Karma is your adhikar, is your right. It is your human right to do action. So act we must. That is our God-given right to act. But in the second line he cautions, ma paleshu kadachana. But the result is not in your hands. So I do my self-action, I do the right action, I surrender the results to the Lord. As long as I'm putting in the right action, I expect that the right result also will come. Okay. So one guna arises to suppress the other two gunas. This is what he says in verse number 10, which means basically we have the free will to change our gunas, the composition of our gunas, through the various sadhanas. Now, from verse number 11, Krishna is starting the third topic of the gunas, which is called lingam or manifestation. In an individual, how do we know which guna is predominant? So it is a way to assess our own personality also, because the gunas are not visible. I cannot tell by looking at you whether you are sattvic or rajasic or tamasic, but through your actions we can know which guna is dominant. So that's why the word Shiva Lingam is used. Lingam is there, right? Shiva Lingam. So what it means that the unmanifest God shows us his manifest form. That's why the Lingam, the Shiva Lingam, is the manifested representation of the unmanifest. So the our characteristics are the representation of the gunas which are in us. So this is called Lingam, Lingam of the gunas. And here he says, first in verse number 11, he talks about the manifestation of the sattvic gunas. How do we know if sattvic gunas are getting stronger in me? Krishna says, sarva dwareshu. Sarva is all, dwara is doors. When all the doors of what? Asmin dehe means this body. So what are the doors of the body? The five senses, the ears, the eyes, the nose, the tongue, the skin. These are the five gateways to our body, the jnana indriyas. Now, therefore, he says when all the gateways to the body are upajayate. Upajayate means, in the second line you see the word upajayate, means they radiate. They radiate with what? Prakasha, with brightness, with light. So what does it mean? That when your five senses radiate with light, what is the allegorical meaning behind it?
Heart makes light.
Inside light. What do you mean when the doorways to your body are radiating light? Awareness or what? So what if your five senses use to gather what? Knowledge, right? And sattva is identified with knowledge. So that means what? When your five senses are totally receptive to knowledge, you're hungry for knowledge, all your five senses are absorbing the knowledge, seeking knowledge, that is when sattva guna is arising. That means if you come to this class and if you're listening with dedication, with real intent and purpose to know, that means that the sattvic guna is now manifesting in you. That is a very symptom or symbol of a sattvic guna person. One who is so eager, so receptive, Now this knowledge can not, it's not necessary spiritual knowledge, it also can be worldly knowledge, whichever it is. As long as your senses are what we call hankering for knowledge, that means the sattvic gunas are rising in. And that's why not everybody likes to come for religious class. Why? Because they have predominant rajasic or tamasic gunas. It's only predominant sattvic guna people who are receptive, who are hungry for this knowledge. Right? So, since sattvic guna is associated with the six also including the mind, so this is what it means. When they are all radiating, they are absorbing knowledge, they become active for hearing and absorbing knowledge, he says, tada. So you can see the word tada in the third line there. Tada means then you can infer. That is a very, what we call manifestation of the hunger for knowledge. Krishna says, tada vidvat, may you know that iti, the word iti there, you see in the fourth line, refers to sattvic gunas. So you can infer, if you are constantly receptive and absorbing knowledge, you can infer that sattvic gunas are vivridam. Vivridam means they are fully developed, they are now predominating in you. So one of the easiest signs to tell whether you are attracted to this knowledge, that means the sattvic gunas are now very powerful, very strong in you. And therefore, you should take full advantage and progress further. Okay? And another thing it tells us, since our senses are what we call receptive to knowledge, it also tells us something, that we are also not interested in pursuing selfish pleasures also. There is very less inclination to pursue our selfish desires. We rather devote more time to come and acquire knowledge also. And also it means what? You do not like to waste time sleeping and eating. Both rajas and tamas are now suppressed. Okay? Now, what is the lingam of a rajasic mind now? In verse number 12. Lingam of a rajasic mind, just like a sattvic mind maximizes use of the jnana indriyas, a rajasic person will maximize use of the karma indriyas also. That is the difference. The karma indriyas become very active. So what is the first sign of a rajasic dominant person? The very first word there, lobaha, greed. Very greedy person, right? And there is a very famous saying in Sanskrit to describe a greedy person. In Sanskrit there is one very nice saying, I'll just translate it into English. They say the one who has no money, what does he want? $100. He's very happy. The one who has no money, you give him $100, he's very, very happy. The one who has $100 wants $1,000. The one who has $1,000 wants $100,000. Okay? The one who has $100,000, or let's say $100 million, wants what? Now a person has enough money already. What does he want next? Power, right? So he wants to become king. It's an ancient Sanskrit saying. The one who's got $100,000, now he wants to become king. And the one who has become king wants to become what? King means only one kingdom. So wants to become what? Ruler of the whole world, right? And the one who is the ruler of the whole world, what does he want? He wants to become Indra. Indra is what? Ruler of the Swarga Loka also. And the one who has become Indra, what does he want to become? He wants to become Brahma. And the one who is Brahma wants to become what? Shiva. And the one who is Shiva wants to become Vishnu. So there is no end to, like Gandhi said, there is no end to man's greed. But to needs there is an end, but to our greed there is no end. So one of the very characteristics between, characteristics of a rajasic person is manifestation of that greed. And what is the difference between desire and greed? What is the difference between desire and greed?
One is selfless, one is selfish.
Desire can be selfish. What is the desire? What is the difference between desire and greed?
Greed overpowers your.
Greed overpowers your. True, that is true. Greed is nothing but desire out of control. That is greed. You have one, two desires, okay, but when you have multiple desires, they get out of control, then that is greed. Because greed wants you to have more and more and more. And therefore, when you can see a person who's greedy for everything, power he wants, money he wants, better car, better house, keeps on, what does the greed drive you to? Here the second quality of a rajasic person manifests as pravritti. Pravritti means action, endless action, workaholic, action upon action, endless running around. And then that is also not enough. What is the third quality of a rajasic person? So here, karma, the greed is one, excessive activity, karma is two. Selfish activity. Then third problem is what? In the first line you see the word arambaha. Arambaha karmanam. The two words go together. Arambaha karmanam. Pravritti is action. Arambaha karmanam is what? Undertaking of varieties of planning. Because one is you are acting now to satisfy your current desires. While you are acting now to satisfy your current desires, mind is already planning ahead somehow what else I want also. That is called arambaha, karmanam. Before you start the next action, you are already planning a lot of things also already. So one is working hard now day and night to accomplish what you want. Second is your mind is also already busy programming and planning again what you want to do after this also. Next project, one project is finished, your mind is already got five projects ahead there. So that is karmanam arambaha. Constantly planning for acquisition, expansion, more and more and more. Okay? And what do you think is the nature of such a mind? So here, he uses two words in the second line. Asmaha. Asmaha means a mind is constantly restless. The two qualities of the mind. One, it is constantly restless, highly stressed. Right? And the second thing is spraha. Spraha means constantly hankering, hankering and hankering. So asmaha spraha. He has everything but still not satisfied. Whatever others have, I must have more. Or either I want to take away what others have also. So asmaha spraha, very what we call restless and unsatisfied mind. And such a quality, I mean, we can look upon it as a productive mind, but unfortunately when you are unable to control the greed, then it can lead to many other negative consequences. These are the problem when people get greedy, then they exploit other people. They destroy other people. It also leads to corruption. So they are the ones who want to take easy money because they want to satisfy so many desires. These are the very people who are prone to corruption. And what else? You read the papers every day and you wonder how these people fall for get rich quick schemes. These are basically the rajasic people. Right? Get rich, what? Get rich quite quickly, right? Those all kinds of schemes. You put in $1,000, I'll give you $100,000 after 1 week. Because why? Because of my excessive greed, I want to make things faster and faster and faster. So this is the nature, Krishna says, etani. Etani means these signs, jayante, they arise in a person, etani jayante, they arise in a person who is who is Rajasik. Etani, in the third line you see Rajasi Etani Jayate. Etani means these signs. Jayante come into manifestation of a Rajasik Guna person. Thirst, greed, constant activity, planning for more and more. Verse number 30 now, Lingam of Tamoguna. What happens when Tamasik Guna rises to overpower Rajas and Sattva? So here he says, Tamasi Vibhride. Tamasi Vibhride means when Tamas arises or fully develops, what are the signs? The signs are, now what was the Sattvic sign there? You saw the word Prakasha. If you look at verse 11, you see in the second line the word Prakasha. Now look at verse 13. What do you see in the first line? A Prakasha. That means Prakasha is one who is interested to gather knowledge. Tamasic person is totally opposite A Prakasha. He is totally not interested to know anything. He doesn't want to know anything. Dullness. So the mind is incapable of absorbing, and even if he comes to class, you will never absorb and retain any knowledge at all. So it is totally opposite A Prakasha. Then if you look at verse 12, what was the Rajasic manifestation? You saw Pravritti. Pravritti means what? Action. So Tamasic person in verse 13 is called A Pravritti. In the first line you see that A Pravritti, which means allergic to any form of activity or action. Such a person is very reluctant to put in any effort, either on worldly or spiritual path. So therefore, because of lack of knowledge, because of lack of activity, what is the qualities that manifest in the person here? Krishna says pramada. Pramada is that there is negligence in the person's work. Many, many mistakes. Continuously being careless and negligent. And also moha, which is delusion, confusion, indecisiveness, procrastinating mind. So these are all the qualities of a tamasic person. So now the third topic of lingam has been covered for sattvic, rajasic and tamasic gunas. Now in the next two verses, 14 and 15, Krishna will describe what is called as gati or direction of travel upon death. If sattvic guna is predominant when you die, where you go? Rajasic guna is predominant when you die, where you go? And tamasic guna also. So when each guna is predominant, what is the cause of travel upon death? Now the question is, when we talk about travel upon death, who is traveling? So the gross body, which is the stula sharira, is cremated. Then we have the subtle body, which is the sukshma sharira, and we have the karana sharira, the causal body, and on top of that we have the atman, which is the consciousness. Right? So gross body cannot travel because you have cremated it. Atma cannot travel because it is all pervading. Therefore what travels is the subtle and the causal bodies. Right? So we must keep this in mind now. When he says what travels, it is the subtle, the stula, the sukshma sharira and the karana sharira. Okay? So what does the subtle body and the causal body, when it travels, what does it do? In chapter 15, Krishna says it travels to find a new gross body. A new gross body is allocated and the subtle and causal body will enter. What is in the subtle body? Mind, intellect, manas, buddhi and ankar, ego. Manas, buddhi, ankar. What is in the causal mind? The vasana. So the minute that enter into a new body, what happens? All the past karmas, all your past characteristics, your subhava immediately manifests. That's why in the children we can see certain qualities already manifesting, which are carried forward by the subtle and the causal bodies. So now here Krishna says, what happens yada when sattva pravrade, when sattva is predominant upon time of pralayam. Now pralayam has got two meanings. One is mahapralayam, when at the end of the four yugas everything goes into pralayam, everything goes from manifested to unmanifested. That is called mahapralayam. Here the word pralayam does not mean mahapralayam, it means the individual pralaya, the individual death of every individual. Okay, so when that individual dies, so here he uses the word dehabrit. Dehabrit here means an embodied being. Here basically it means your subtle and your causal body. Now there are three things actually you must remember: subtle body, causal body, plus the reflected consciousness. So there is, remember I drove the chart last time on the board: subtle body, causal body, and reflected consciousness. Okay, the reflected consciousness you can call as jiva. Okay, so jiva will travel together with subtle and causal body. That here is called dehabrit. Okay, so when this jiva, when the body dies, this subtle body travels. Now, when this subtle body travels, is it of a jnani or a agyani? It's a jnani, because if it is a jnani, he dies, he immediately does not come back for another birth. So this agyani, this person who is ignorant, who has not transcended the three gunas, what happens? Although he has sattvic guna predominant, but he has not transcended sattvic guna, so what happens upon pralayam? He says, tadha, when he dies, pratipadyate, he attains what? Uttama lokas, the higher lokas. Now when we talk about higher lokas, we should not think that they are up there. Higher lokas can have two meanings. One is either you go to deva loka, which means you have a lot of enjoyment in the what you call the six lokas above, you have a lot of enjoyment. Or it can also mean that you come back to earth and take a superior birth. Right? So we must not think uttama loka means only going up. What it means is basically you take a superior birth. So whatever obstacles you had in this life, whether financial obstacles, medical health problems or whatever, everything is removed away for you to progress more faster on the spiritual path. So uttama loka means basically what we call better birth, a more better birth, a higher birth. Okay? And what we call this higher birth again will depend on your karmas also. Okay? And then he says, what is this better birth? So he gives a description of this better birth in verse number 18. He uses the word what is that word there? Sorry, we are on verse number 17, right? No. Uttavam gacchanti sattvastha mati jaganya guna vrittishta adu gacchanti tamasa. So those who abide in the better worlds here basically means free of any problems. All the obstacles, the problems you have in life are always removed. Now that's why if anybody who is knowledgeable will never want devaloka. We all think that devaloka means moksha. But anybody who is knowledgeable about all the lokas, the six lokas on top, this is bhuloka. You have bhuva, swaha, maha, jana, tapa, satya. Okay, there are six lokas on top there, right? Now, if you are knowledgeable, you would not ask for birth in those six lokas. Why is that? You have to come back again. Because you cannot attain moksha by going to the deva lokas. You have to come back. So it is the only way you can attain moksha is through human birth. You can get direct moksha. So it is better for you to come back to earth and take a superior birth where all the obstacles are removed. Right? That's why the upper lokas are called bhoga bhumi. Bhoga bhumi means you only go to reap what you have, enjoy what you have reaped. Okay? But earth is called, bhuloka is called karma bhumi. It is only here that every action you do has got some kind of reaction. So where do the sattvic person go upon death? They go to, now you can see in the word amalan there in verse number 14. Amalan means taintless. What type of loka do you go to? It is amala loka. What does taintless mean? Basically devoid of any problems. So you don't have any problems in your next birth. That's why it is called a higher birth. Not in terms of going up, but a more superior birth, amala. Taintless from problems, from disease, from sufferings. Okay, verse 15 now, he talks about the death or the direction for two, both rajasic and tamasic. So first he talks about rajasic. So where does the rajasic person go? The jiva travels jayate to where? Karma sangishu. Karma sangishu means what type of birth? Attached to karma means what type of birth? So what type of birth is that? Back to human birth again. Because you come back to karma bhumi, you come back into human birth. Why? Because you are prone to action. And then why we say human birth? Why not animal birth? Because again, as a human birth, you will have the choice to make a change, and every action will incur punyam and papam. So for a rajasic person, they have to come back again into a human birth again. So karma sangishu, where every action can earn punyam or papam. So what about tamasic birth? He says, for when one dies in tamasic predominant gunas, muda yonishu jayate. Yonishu is wombs. Muda yonishu is wombs of deluded species. This is where tamasic people come back for birth in lower wombs, meaning animal, insect, plant womb. So I think somebody asked a question, from human can you go backwards? Yes, it says here you can. If you die with predominant tamasic gunas, muda yonishu jayate, you can come back and take birth in lower wombs, which is basically animal, insect and plant. So that's why it's very important for us to know about the gunas, to rise to sattvic gunas, because at least when we die, we come back to a higher, a more superior birth, where all the obstacles for us to progress are removed. So here in these two verses now, he has concluded the gati or the travel upon death. And next week there's no class, so when we come back the following week, Saturday, we will take up the balance verses of chapter 14. Any questions at this stage? Yes.
If tamasic, we are born as a lower birth, does it also depend on the kind of thing you need to decide whether you're a cat or a dog,
yes,
or a butterfly?
Yes. Basically, your inclinations and type of desires you have will determine.